You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
With Kim Cattrall officially not joining the reboot of Sex and the City, she has suddenly become available to grace the Broadway stage once again. Imagine the possibilities.
Hello?
Yes, hello. This is Cashew calling from Ozdus Casting. Am I speaking to Kim Cattrall's manager?
Yeah, Melvin Schmendrick here. How can I help you?
Hello, Mr. Schmendrick. I hope you're having a defying gravity day.
What?
Casting was just wanting Miss Cattrall to read for the role of Madame Morrible in Wicked for when Broadway comes back.
Is that the green one?
No, that's Elphaba.
Is that the pink one?
No, and just to be clear, Glinda isn't pink. She just likes pink. No. Madame Morrible is the headmistress of Shiz.
What'd you call me?
Nothing, sir. Look, it's a super fun role, and there isn't much singing, so it won't be too hard for her to learn.
Yeah, that's a shame, because Kim is one hell of a jazz singer.
Yeah, I know. We've all seen that video.
All right. Well, just send over the sides, and I'll have a self-tape.
Yes, sir. Hope you have a wonderful one short day.
Hello, I'm Kim Cattrall, and I'll be reading for the role of the older, but still sexy, Madame Morrible in Wicked. Oh, Miss Elphaba, many years I have waited for a gift like yours to appear. Why, I predict the wizard could make you his magic grand vizier. My dear, I'll write at once to the wizard. Tell him of you in advance. With a talent like yours, honey, there's a definite chance. If you work as you should, you'll be making...
Broadway, Broadway, in all of its glory.
We all have a memory.
We all have a story.
Was there an understudy?
Or did the show stop?
Oi.
Did you see Barbara before she shot to the top?
Cool.
Join us as we revel in our reverie. It's my Broadway memory.
That jazz.
How dumb was that?
So stupid. Hello.
Hi.
And welcome to My Broadway Memory. I'm Kim Cattrall. I'm Remy Germanario.
And I'm Adina Menzel. And we are welcoming you, Michael Kushner, and welcome to My Broadway Memory. We know that, now real talk for a second, we know that there are a lot of rough things going on in the country and the world right now. And we acknowledge that and honor everyone who's doing their part to keep our country safe. In so many ways.
And we thank all of you for joining us here tonight to celebrate the joy of Broadway.
Yay!
We hope this can bring you a little bit of happiness into your evening and put a smile on your face. I don't know if you've noticed, but me and Michael have dressed up as ketchup and mustard.
Yes, that makes me like Miss Schnippers.
I know, we're on the Whole 30, so we can't have ketchup or mustard.
No. Sauce. Oh, sauces sound good right now.
Additives.
We're just right now eating like cat. Maybe you named the casting director Cashew because that's all we're eating.
No, that is exactly why I did it.
That's funny. Okay, so My Broadway Memory aims to keep Broadway alive until the theater returns. Us and our amazing guests will discuss our favorite unheard stories and memories either by picking up a playbill at random from their collection, like I have planned, or referencing a piece of memorabilia, or honestly just kibitzing over random memories. We're just a bunch of friends talking about how Broadway has influenced our lives for the better. So Remy, I want to know, what was your first Broadway memory?
Well, mine was kind of random because my first Broadway show was The Dinner Party by Neil Simon with like V.N. Cox, Jan Maxwell, Henry Winkler was in it. Now, a Neil Simon play is sort of a strange thing for like a 9-year-old to see as their first Broadway show, but it sort of made sense for me because at my community theater, they pretty much only did Neil Simon.
That's funny.
So I actually loved it. But my first like big Broadway musical was Rent, and I was like 10 and I didn't know what was happening, but it was very fun and energetic. What was your first Broadway memory?
So I grew up with national tours because I'm from Florida, Florida. So the Broward Center and stuff like that. So I saw Titanic because I was obsessed with Titanic and saw Cats and Riverdance. Just really great shows. But my first Broadway show was Wicked, January 5th, 2005. Edina, 2 days before Edina fell through her, the
trap door.
And 4 days before her last scheduled show, which was January 9th. And I was told we were going to try to get tickets. And under the marquee on 51st Street, my mom was like, all right, let's get a picture just to say that we were here. And when the flash went off, she said, we actually do have tickets. And then we saw Roque. I remember it to that day. And every time I'm at the Gershwin, I always look at my seat. And also whenever I walk right by the stage door, I always give like, it's like a moment of like prayer for me because that was the first moment in the Broadway industry. And it's inspired so much to this day. So I always give a moment of thanks right outside of the Gershwin Theater on 51st Street.
I love that. Mm-hmm. But we got more memories like that for you a little bit later with our awesome guests, Ann Harada and Ali Ewell. Ah! Can't wait to hear what they have to say, but they are Broadway memories. No. But, you know, to stay updated on news and future guests, please, please, please give us a follow on social media.
Yes, please.
On Instagram and Facebook, Fishburg. We are at My Broadway Memory, and on Twitter, we are at My B-Way Memory.
Yes, and you'll find out ways that you can be on the show too.
Yeah.
Not only do we want to keep Broadway memories alive, but we want you to as well.
So we want to hear from you, the viewers, about some of your favorite Broadway memories and how you are keeping Broadway alive during this time until live theater returns.
So pull a playbill out. Pull a playbill out from your collection at random and talk about it. Share with us the story that's associated with that playbill. We really want to hear it, and record that video, like 30 seconds to a minute long, and email it to us at mybroadwaymemory@gmail.com. That's mybroadwaymemory@gmail.com. And you'll have a chance to be featured on our show.
And, you know, we personally love seeing Broadway shows with our friends and family, going to Joe Allen's after, of mm-hmm. course. And we can't wait to do that again. But in the meantime, let's hear from some of our friends of My Broadway Memory for our weekly segment,
Your Broadway Memory.
Talk to me. It's so easy to leave me.
I have many great Broadway memories, but for this, I'm choosing a West End production of Follies. My parents, when I was about 13, took me to see it, and I was utterly blown away. I still get goosebumps thinking about Eartha Kitt standing still and singing I'm Still Here. I bought the original Broadway cast album and I listened to it on my record player over and over again in my bedroom. I'll forever be grateful to that for introducing me to Sondheim, and I've been a huge fan of his work ever since. And I'll be forever grateful to my parents for taking me to the theatre and giving me that love.
Hey, My Broadway Memory. Corey here from Broadway Plus. My favorite Broadway memory was from my Broadway debut, if you will. It was the first show that I worked on from out-of-town tryout all the way through its closing, and that was Frozen. So we're flashing back to the opening night of the show at the St. James. We had just gotten through the whole show. It was snowing in the theater. My best friend Rosie had flown out from San Francisco to be my date. I got to wear a bow tie, and we were all just there to celebrate the labor of love that it took to put on such a behemoth musical on stage. It was a wild sense of pride, excitement, accomplishment, and just a huge breath of relief.
Thank you to Betty Buckley for lending your voice and musical talents to that opening. We hope we don't get a cease and desist like you gave Donald Trump when he used that song for his rallies.
Fingers crossed. And thank you so much to Corey and one of my favorite people, Polly McKee. That's a bad Scottish accent for your Broadway memories. Hi, Polly.
Oh my God. I think it's time to bring on our guest.
Absolutely. Yay! Okay. So our very first guest, who is awesome, is Ali Ewalt. Her Broadway credits include Les Miserables and Christine and Phantom of the Opera. Off-Broadway includes The Fantastics and also the national tour of West Side Story.
Our second guest is Anhorada. Broadway credits include Christmas Eve in Avenue Q, and Butterfly, Cinderella, Les Mis, 9 to 5, and Seuss-Sequels, and NBC's Smash. And she most recently appeared in Emojiland off-Broadway, Hysterical, and on the hit Emmy-nominated web series, Indoor Boys. You can currently catch her eating steak on Flight Attendant.
Please welcome Ali Ewa, the Anhorada.
Hi, friends.
Hello.
So glad that you're here.
Happy to be here. Lovely to see you all.
How's your mornings going, your days? What's going on?
Nothing.
And?
I got nothing. My life is so dull. It's tragic.
I was going to say, this is all awful, of course, but I think we needed a break just a second ago. And it's lasting a little longer than I had anticipated, but, and it was amazing to see you do Emojiland. It was hysterical. You have turns to everything you touch turns to gold. It's amazing. And
well, don't I wish that were true. I'll tell you about it in my Broadway memory.
Can't wait.
Not everything. What? Yes, Allie?
What? Oh, what did I do today? Is that my?
Yes.
Are you saying something?
I was just laughing because I love hanging out with Anne, and she tickles me so on stage and off.
And you know what? Things are slow right now, but we get to do fun stuff like this, you know?
So how did you guys meet? Because when Anne and I were talking, I was like, who would you like to come on the show with? And she immediately said, Allie. And so how did you guys meet? What's your history like together? Tell me, Dish.
Allie?
Oh, well, I'll take that one. So, I mean, obviously I was a, big Anhorada fan from her illustrious, amazing theater career. But when I was doing the 2006 revival of Les Miserables as Cosette, Anne joined the cast as Madame Thénardier. And I don't know that we really actually did anything together on stage, Anne. We, changed clothes together. Yes. Backstage,
yeah, and but... I basically abused little Cosette, but not.
I was about to say.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I think I watched you in Paris because, in the Paris scene, Cosette is sort of off to the side while the Thénardiers are doing their thing, and maybe we did the opening scenes together because all of the Les Mis principals, for the most part,
we were all in the factory.
Yes,
and one day more.
Real mad at the foreman, that kind of.
Yeah.
Thing.
Yeah.
And of course, One Day More.
Yeah, One Day More, Lovely Lady.
Oh, well, One Day More.
Yeah. But there's
no fun for the Thénardiers because we're kind of in a trap under the floor. And then you just sort of come up and then but everybody else is booming on stage. And you're just watch them run amok. I mean, it's really not the greatest.
But what a fun entrance, a fun reveal.
You don't even know.
It's iconic, but the idea of being in One Day More, you don't get to do the step. You're not really there.
Cosette doesn't either. I did get to do it when I was on the
ensemble. No, that's right. You sort of stand on tour. With old JVJ.
Oh, yeah, she does, doesn't she?
Yeah, Valjean and I just do this whole mimey thing where we're mad at each other and then we make up and then we pack. And usually it involved Alex Gemignani, trying to make me giggle or... I mean, we were very professional, very professional. But
now, both of you, and what were you going to say?
I was going to say my least favorite thing to do in a song is watch somebody pack. it's so dumb. It's so dumb. But I remember in Chess, which I love, Chess is one of my, it's Chess. It's one of the greatest scores ever written. But I remember in Chess, in Nobody's Side, Judy Kuhn had to pack a suitcase for the whole song. And I was literally are you kidding me? This whole song, she's just going to pack?
So you also don't like Meadowlark then?
Right.
Does she pack in Meadowlark? Does that girl pack in Meadowlark?
Yeah,
I've never seen production. I have no idea. Why that song was sung.
Kelly O'Hara had to pack all throughout, what's it called, Your Majesty. What is that song in King and I?
Oh,
King and I, yes. Right. Oh, yes.
What is that song called? Whatever that song is called. There was a lot of packing.
Can I tell you what I think of you? Shall I tell you what I think of you?
Yes. Yes, yes.
AKA the packing song. Everyone's the hit song from The King and I.
And there's also another, you know, more contemporary reference, which is I Gotta Run, Pasek and Paul's. I think it's like she's like packing her running shoes or something like that. And it's like, I gotta run. And like every high schooler does it for thespians. And it's just like really in the emotion, really into it, and really gorge.
Oh my God.
I wanted to say, now I've worked with the both of you before. So, you know, I'm not that insane. So when I show you this to you, I don't want you to be like, I have to go, bye. But I could listen to you talk about Les Mis forever because I actually have a Les Mis tattoo.
Yes, you do.
Which is, I know, but you would, looking at it, it's designed so you can never really tell it's a Les Mis tattoo because it's not like Cosette's face. But it's One Day More in French, Le Grand Jeu, and it's in Victor Hugo's handwriting, but he never wrote the phrase. So I found his manuscripts and I pieced together his letters to form it.
That's so cool.
Wow.
Because I'm gay.
That is really cool.
No, yeah. Right.
So look, both Michael and I have had the pleasure of seeing you both perform live, you know, and of course you're huge admirers. Ali, we saw you in Phantom of the Opera a few years ago with our pal Jay Johnson.
And I did see you both in Les Mis as well.
Yes. So there you go. We actually have a picture, some pictures Michael took of you for his photo series, The Dressing Room Project, I think. Oh,
yes.
Look at that.
Oh, so remember theater, remember being backstage.
And thank goodness that we have these to remember being backstage, and we'll be back soon. But first of all, we loved the show. Obviously, we had a blast. It's always like amazing to see a Broadway classic like that you've seen before. And new experience, we were right under the chandelier. So we got the full experience. But really, really cool. You had the honor of being the first Asian American actress to lead Phantom of the Opera. So, like, how did that feel, and what does that mean to you as an Asian American artist?
I mean, it's interesting, right? Because I was obsessed with Phantom since I was a child, much like most people who are in this business or love musical theater. And so, you know, I had been auditioning for the show for about 10 years on and off for different incarnations, for the Vegas production, for the tour, for the Broadway cast. And so in many ways, you know, getting to do the show was just felt like an entirely selfish accomplishment on my end. I was thrilled because I wanted to play the part, and I've always been a soprano, and like she is the iconic soprano part. And so then to have this added bonus of being, you know, the first of many, you know, many things, right? The first Filipina American and Asian American and BIPOC Christine on Broadway ever in 30 years, you know, was a tremendous honor. It definitely felt like sort of both a privilege and a responsibility to make sure that, you know, obviously I was the first, but not the last. And it was also just incredible how much the Asian American Broadway community really, you know, was so supportive and turned out, and, you know, people like Anne, who I've been looking up to and admiring their careers for so many years, and everybody, not because you're older, Anne, just because you've done lots of cool things. but you know, like the fact not that they all you came to see me.
I'm old enough. I saw the original production like in the first week or something that it was open. And for me to get to see Allie play Christine, I just cried like so hard. Like it felt like such a huge step for everybody, you know, like, cause I remember, you know, basically like I was a girl, her, you know, a young actor, you know, I could have, you know, it's sort of like, not that I could have ever played Christine because I don't sing like that, but the idea that I would go when I was young and I went to like open calls and I went to all these auditions and I just thought like, well, I'll never get to be seen for one of the principals. You know, I can only audition for the ensemble because they're never going to cast an Asian person. And to see her kind of like in all her glory, being Christine and also being Cosette, honestly, like those kinds of parts. It felt so huge. She's the Kamala Harris of our community.
And for so many of these roles that, you know, are now being represented by, you know, by POCs and everything, there's no reason that they shouldn't have been, you know, and it's great that, you know, that we have,
you know, trailblazers like you all, you know, to do this. And it's all about representation for, Amen. You know, little children to see themselves on stage and know that they can do it too. You know, that's awesome. I love that.
Thanks. I mean, and that's that thing too, where I think, you know, I speak, most of us believed that we could do things because we saw other people do them. You know, I know that when I saw Lea Salonga in Les Mis for the first time, that was like a huge watershed. This is possible for me. And so it's all, you know, sort of built upon itself. Mm-hmm. Like, I wouldn't be here if it weren't for the amazing people that came before me. And I think it's really moving to think that then I have that impact on other people going forward. It's kind of an amazing legacy to be a part of.
Thanks, Allie. Thank we can't you. Wait to hear your Broadway memory too. But Anne, not only have I gotten to see you on stage in multiple things, Obsessed, love you. I've also gotten to work with you on the hit web series Indoor Boys, created by Wes Taylor and Alex Wise. And I was executive producer, and you were the best and kindest and hysterical and most amazing. So we just wanted to show a clip of you as Ruth in season 3 of Indoor Boys.
Hide the drugs, it's the landlord.
Uh-oh, Luke, put away the meth. You could just disregard.
My name is Ruth. A little about me. I collect birds and I feel terrible for my age. Wow. Welcome to the building. If you need anything fixed, we don't do toilets, we don't do lights. Only pre-war freezers and carpets are banned. I'll turn things off, but never on. I'll install window guards on your tub. I'll enter your apartment unannounced, but only in the morning. And I'll never read your mail sometimes.
Yes. So funny.
The literal best. And so it was literally the best. It was such a joy to bring so many Broadway personalities on set. And after, okay, so... I do have a question first, and that was, is there anything about Indoor Boys that made your inner artist happy? Is there anything that you feel like you got to experience that you haven't experienced before? What was Indoor Boys like for you?
Oh my God, are you kidding? It was the most fun ever. Just honestly, to like be sitting around a bathroom with like Carol Lee Carmelo and Vianne Cox. It's like, this is my dream come true. This is all I ever want to do, is like hang out and like, you know, just have the chance to like sit more or less in the Equity Lounge with like people like that, who, you know, you've known for 1,000 years, but you never see, you know, you never really get to hang out. And so it was really special. I felt really special. And that's have to thank Indoor Boys. It's literally the only time I've ever been nominated for an award of any kind.
So cool.
Yeah, we
are. First of many.
Yes, first of many, certainly.
Oh, no, nobody cares about me, Allie. It's fine. It's totally fine. But literally, like, Indoor Boys was like, you got a nomination for comedy. I was like, what? Could not believe it. Nobody has ever cared about anything I've ever done like that. So
it's about damn time. It's about damn time. And like, you know, I mean, I hope this makes you feel, you know, I don't think it needs to, you don't need to feel better about anything, but like, I, you know, the memory that you said of like you hanging out with Vianne Cox and Carol Lee Carmelo, the thing that I wanted to follow up with was, there was one when we filmed the party scene, which went late. It was scheduled to go late. And we were all sort of walking side to side because of how body was hurting. My favorite thing was coming up into the bedroom that I was sleeping in on set and seeing the three of you on my bed. And I was like, middle school me would be freaking out to catch Carol Lee Carmelo, Vianne Cox, and Anne Harada just sitting on my bed. Like, it was the literal best. So thank you for being an incredible part of Indoor Boys, and you deserve that award and many more. Yeah. And just, we love you. We love you so much. So thank you. Yeah. Thank you for everything that you do for the community, both of you.
Thanks. So before we get into our Broadway memories, we've covered so many great questions already. This is so fun. We actually have some fan questions for you. How exciting. So Call Me Adam on Instagram wants to know, what is the most challenging role you have ever played thus far in your career? Who wants to go first?
Anne, you go first.
No, I don't like these questions.
We could skip it. You could be like, next.
Do concert things count?
Sure. Yeah, sure.
When I had to play the witch in Into the Woods for a concert, that was the hardest thing I've ever done because part of me was so mad that like I didn't have all of the words right in my head, you know, because it's not like I haven't been listening to that show my whole life, but I just didn't. So I had to hold the book and I felt like I was so constrained and, you know, but I just wanted to make sure that like I gave justice to those songs and those moments. And I was just like, oh, like, why am I so limited as an actor? Like, basically that was like in my head the whole time. But I just thought it was so fun and it was so exciting and to do with an all Asian cast, you know that how that goes. Anyway, The Witch, that was a
stinking fun. It's amazing.
I mean, it was great. But it was so hard. It was so hard. And, you know, like you put it together in a week and you just want to kill yourself.
Yeah. I think the audience's understanding of those things that are put up really quick in the concerts. And I bet you did an incredible job. And that's a meaty role to do in a week, you know?
Well, I have to say, go to see the full performance because I think I was doing Phantom at the time. And so I had something at the same time. But they let me pop in to like the dress rehearsal, which was basically probably like the first put together. And I got to watch maybe half an hour of it. And Anne was amazing. I was sitting there like on the edge of my seat, just like cheering and laughing. And I was totally blown away. So I can only imagine the actual performance was absolutely incredible.
I would pay a lot of money to see you do The Witch.
Oh, yeah.
Are there any videos?
I don't know. Are there?
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. I've never seen any.
Do we have a video?
We're going to do a quick YouTube search when the show is over and see if there are any.
Allie, what about you? What was your most challenging?
B-roll. Well, I guess maybe to piggyback off of that. So the National Asian Artists Project? Productions. Anyway, NAP,
yes, by our company,
COVID brain is in full effect, was Cinderella. And Anne and I did that in March. Like it was right before I was looking at these pictures. Like I think it was March 3rd or something. We had this tremendous
crazy
cast of Asian American performers and a chorus and a kids chorus and like everybody in there. And kind of, it was pretty remarkable that I don't think, knock on wood, anybody got sick at that time. But so we did Cinderella and Anne, you know, got to live out all of her Madame Thénardier being mad at Cosette dreams, like to me specifically, because she was my stepmother and then got to yell at me properly. But those things they're so hard to put up because you have the script, but you want to be off the script. And we had to do a, you know, part of Cinderella is the magical costume change. And we had no budget. and so we were able to borrow a dress from LaGuardia High School's production of Cinderella. And our amazing like wardrobe mistress kept trying to like rig me into the thing. We had like maybe one time to practice it. And it was a little tricky. I got stuck when my sleeves got stuck. And my amazing friend Jordan, who was in the ensemble, like saw it. And we actually have all these great pictures that our friend Leah Chang took where you can sort of see in sequence him helping me get the dress out of the dress. And get like while I'm all their dancers all around, like finally the whole thing actually worked, and you could feel the whole audience was clapping, and they kind of enjoyed the fact that it was the magic was a little bit of a struggle.
We love seeing that.
We love it.
One night only, you know. We made it work. It was kind of incredible, but also so challenging because you want to have a fully realized character and relationships with the other people on stage. I mean, it helped that we had an incredible cast, and everybody was just sort of, you know, tuned into each other that way to get through these like really challenging. I think we blocked that yesterday. What did we do there? How did I come to the song? Like, what is this underscoring? You know, just really, it's very team effort when you're doing things that quickly, for sure.
That's amazing. I love that. And our next question is from Retro Snow White, who wants to know, what was your funniest or strangest fan interaction?
Oh, interesting.
Because they can be interesting.
This show. No, I'm just kidding.
This show. Bye.
Funniest or straight? I mean, the funny story I can think of off the top of my head was when I was doing the Fantastics off Broadway. You know, that theater, I did it up at the Snapple on like 50th and Broadway. And just like the original space, like it's very, very, very small. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you know, the Fantastics had been running for so many years that our audiences were a little petite. Like we were lucky if we had 20 people there, which was always a little tricky because it's a comedy and you're sort of relying on people to react in real time. We had these amazing comedic actors. But I remember one time we're going into the song Soon It's Gonna Rain, and I was playing opposite my friend Jim Shubin. And you know, Louise is supposed to be 16. I was not 16 at the time. Jim was a bit younger than I am. And I think what happened was there was maybe an audience member who had special needs perhaps, and also a crush on Jim. And so as we're walking together and it's clear that we're about to get together, like in the Soon It's Gonna Rain song, what we hear is, she's too old for him. 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 Jim and I were just like trying to keep a straight face, trying to save the moment. And in my heart, I'm like, how did she know? She read me. She read me so hard. It was pretty funny.
And then you called the doctor on
Snapple.
Oh my God, the Snapple.
At the Majestic, nobody would be saying that.
Right.
But at the Snapple.
It. Yes. If they said it at the Majestic, at least, you know, it would bother the people around them, but it wouldn't get directly into my ear while I was trying to sing.
That's right. Wild. That is what that's hysterical.
Oi. What about you, Anne?
Anne, do you have anything?
People are awful. No, I really have awesome fans. Like, I've never had really bad fan interaction except people who are like, oh well, you seem taller on stage, but to me, that's just normal, you know, just people just making a response. Or like, you're so much older than I thought you were, that kind of stuff.
We've got a thing
again, normal everyday responses. But like, I do remember this one time at Avenue Q where we had one of those people in the front row who was eating. And like every time somebody went out on like to do a scene, like we made it like sort of a game to sort of figure out what kind of sandwich they were having. So like I distinctly remember Stephanie Bruzza going out there and going like, it's turkey with some kind of cheese.
That is so funny.
That's so
hysterical.
A friendly reminder, audience members, always have good theater etiquette. Don't eat, don't talk.
Yeah, just see the show.
That's wild. I did a production of Buyer and Seller where someone was reading the whole show. Reading a book from the beginning. It wasn't like I had bored him. The lights went up and he was reading. Just like it wasn't, and I called him out and he didn't say anything. Silly. Well, thank you to everyone who asked a question.
Read in the theater. It's the worst light ever. That's
it was
so
me.
Dumb.
Yeah. It was so dumb. We had a headphone. It's wild. That's, I wanted to know what he was. I should have tried to guess what he was reading, like you and the sandwich.
Wild.
Yeah.
I don't think I knew that. Yeah.
Well, thank you to everyone who submitted a question. Remember, have good theater etiquette. So we will always take fan questions for future guests. So please keep those questions coming. So next up, we're going to take a small break. And we're going to have a very fun regular segment of ours, Divas Do Weather. Yes, because meteorologists really should be Tony winners, don't you think?
So I don't know how we got this, but last week we had my idol, Dame Julie Andrews, give us a weather report. And I don't think it could get any better than that. But this week we have our newest, I'm nervous.
I know.
We have Idina Menzel. So please welcome Idina Menzel.
How's it?
Hey, Michael. Hey, Remy. Thank you so much for having me. It was hot. My canteen had sprung a leak, and I was thirsty. Look to the western sky. You think cyclones just appear out of the blue? Let the storm rage on. The cold never bothered me anyway.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater,
Suf's creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. Suf's The Original New Musical from Shayna Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Done.
Girl, let it go. Oh my God, thank you, Adina, for the weather. It's always good to know what's happening outside.
Yes,
thank you so much.
Is this so, Anne and Allie, now for our go-to main event activity. We'll have you each pull a playbill out or memorabilia or nothing and just discuss your Broadway memories. So I'm going to actually show you how I like to do it. So it's my week to do it. We alternate. So I have like maybe 16 of these. And so what I like to do is cool. Nailing it. Wrong one. What I like to do is I pulled the book off the shelf randomly. So what I like to do is just sort of just go through like this, and then just Remy tells me when to stop.
Stop.
Okay. So this is Tuck Everlasting, which actually I went for opening and loved the show, had so much fun, and Carolee was in it, and she was incredible. And at the opening party, I remember I was getting food at the buffet, and in front of me was Rachel Dratch. And I was like, because I love Rachel Dratch. I grew up watching her on SNL. You know, since I'm 7, I was able to stay up late and watch SNL. And that was when she was on SNL. And I went up to her and I was like, I want to talk to her about something different. Like, I'm sure she gets so many SNL questions. So I was like, so you were just a judge on Drag Race. What was that like? And she was literally like, someone just asked me about that, but it was fun. And then we like talked for 30 seconds. I was like, enjoy your night. And we went on our way, and that was my Tuck Everlasting experience.
Yes. And all from a random playbill pull, you see where the memories can go. So that's how it goes. Thanks, Michael. Allie,
do
you want to go first?
This isn't super random because it's what's sitting on top. But since we're talking about Les Mis, okay. So I have a photograph. Can you see this? There it is. This is me as Cosette with Valjean. And you might notice something special about this picture. So the reason I have this, I was actually on tour with Les Mis, is because Sierra Boggess, who I had done the Les Mis tour with, we were co-Cosette understudies, had left us to go do Phantom in Vegas. Mm-hmm. And she's told the story many times. She had a bit of a mishap and fell through a trapdoor and was saved by her wedding dress and her front tooth, which she knocked off on the lip of the stage in the final scene. Yes. And because we love Sierra and she has a great sense of humor, and there's a lot of tooth whack involved in Les Mis, particularly the Les Mis tour. The entire company took a picture.
Aww.
Where we all knocked out a tooth.
That's adorable.
And sent it to her because we're a family in tragedy and good times. But she loved it. I think it totally cheered her up.
And this is why we have workers' compensation.
Yeah. Yeah, this is why we have a union. She has a new tooth now, all is well. And now everybody knows to be really careful with trapdoors being open, because that definitely that happened on Broadway a couple of times, and our stage management was great, and they were always, you know, would tell us if things were open, we'd have to kind of hold off stage because when it's covered with fog and all of that stuff, because the trapdoors that and it was different in Vegas, but on Broadway where the candelabras come up and down, they each have their own little door. And so like while they're coming up or before they come up, they're open. It's funnier in my head because I know that she's fine and because it's sort of, because I know that she thinks it's funny, but yeah, that's so, you know, when bad things happen, you show up in solidarity.
So her dress saved her.
Yes. Yeah. Her dress, because the wedding dress has, you know, a bustle and like all of the ribbing from like the corset and is giant. And so it sort of braced her in, like she fell down a bit, but not, you know, not terribly far. And then just whacked her face on the stage.
Wow. That is wild.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm glad that you're laughing at it, but I think now we can use some good news.
Yes.
And before we get to Anne's memory, we're going to share our good news segment. And each show we like to highlight an organization or cause that is doing good in the world.
And for this week, we are happy to have the Dental Association of Broadway. No, I'm just kidding. Emily Ang and Allison Gilbert from Lyft Music Funds. Let's hear from them.
Allison and Emily here from Lyft Music Fund.
So Lyft Music Fund was created in response to the racial injustice in the field of music. We support young student musicians, Black, Latinx, and Native musicians. The wealth gap in our country is largely along racial lines. And so we saw a real need to support the future of music and to make our field more diverse and more equitable. So we award micro grants, they're called Lyft Awards, in the amount of up to $250 every month to young musicians who apply. And these can support things like instrument repairs, headshots, application fees, young artist programs. They're really just an infinite amount of costs associated with music.
Anybody in the United States or its territories can apply for a grant. The application is on our website, which is just liftmusicfund.org.
Why is the great work that Lyft Music Fund is doing so important, especially right now in this day and age?
Yeah, so we're both classical musicians. And I think this is an issue across the board in all fields, but there's a lack of diversity in our field, and it really affects the perception that students who don't see themselves represented in our field don't feel like they're welcome, and they don't feel like they have a future if they don't see people who look like them. I think that's just a true fact. We are trying to break down those barriers by supporting more people and show them that this is a field for you. There's a place for you in this. And I think, beyond classical music, there are issues of racial inequity in other fields. I think musical theater also deals with this critical issues.
Yeah, so one of our main fundraising mechanisms is we do these virtual mini concerts as fundraisers, and the artists, you know, will do a, you know, 15 to 20 minutes of music and plug the message and set a specific fundraising goal. And so we've had our whole network basically do these concerts, and it's been extremely effective. And so just the more that we can get more people involved. And then also we're always looking for people from the communities that we give these grants to be on our review panel, because, you know, we don't want to gatekeep this. We don't want to make all the decisions.
So for those of you that are watching that are in the industry and want to give back, here's your chance. And for those of you that are watching and need a little support, here's your chance.
So through our website, liftmusicfund.org, there's a contact form and a volunteer form. And then we are on Facebook and Instagram at Lyft Music Fund. And that's a great way to see also all of our winners are featured there as well. So that's, yeah, a great way to be in touch.
Thank you, Emily. Thank you, Allison.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yay. Thank you, Emily and Allison. Remember to visit liftmusicfund.org for more info on how to get involved and support, or if you are a young musician in need.
Yeah, all you future Broadway orchestras or future Christine Daaes, come on now. See if you want to get involved with that. Also, if you are part of an organization that is doing good in the world and want us to feature it on Broadway Memory, please email us at mybroadwaymemory@gmail.com, and we would love to spread the word about your incredible organization along with some awesome stars like Anne and Allie right here.
Email us. Okay, Anne, you're up.
It's your well, turn. I just have to show you my box that says, well, I can't really read it, I guess. It's Sentimental Value Playbills.
Ooh,
yes.
Okay, this is how bad I am. I have a box of Sentimental Value Playbills.
I love
which
that.
Qualify as like not necessarily like sometimes stuff I was in, sometimes stuff I wasn't in, like, you know, random like things from my, you know, summer stock past or whatever. Things that don't fit into a, you know, easily identifiable slot. So I'm scared of these sentimental value playbills. Okay, well, here's one from a show called Sleight of Hand.
Oh.
Can you see that? Sleight of Hand.
Yeah. Tell us about that.
And according to this playbill, and you're looking at it like, what are you talking about, Anne? I've never heard of that. Well, it was a play written by John Pielmeyer, who wrote Agnes of God.
Oh.
And according to this playbill, it was May 1987. And I was the production assistant on this show.
What?
This show ran for a week at the Court Theater. Okay. And that was my first job in New York, was working for a Broadway producer. And, like, basically I answered phones and I picked up her dry cleaning and did stuff like that. But I also got to be the production assistant on this show, which she produced. So I, like, for the backers auditions, it was a magic. Like, if there was one of the lead parts was a magician, right? So there was a trick. And at one point, he stuffs a bunch of swords into a box. And at the end of Act One, you open the box and a dead body rolls out. And that was me.
Huh? Broadway Pete Yeah.
That was me. Wait, in the backers audition, of course.
Oh, in the backers audition. Anyway, I was like, you did that every night for that one week?
Backers, and not on Broadway. No. I was a production assistant. But what that meant was when we got to the Court Theater, I got to run around and put flowers in the actors' dressing rooms. And I was so excited about that. And it was really the first time I'd ever kind of had the run of a Broadway theater where, like, first of all, nobody was there and nobody cared where I was ever. So, like, you know, I'd be all over the house and I'd sit and watch the show from wherever. And I just loved that experience. I loved kind of like being able to walk in the stage door and just like I owned the place. You know, nobody cared. It ran for a week. But it was so thrilling to work on a Broadway show and to kind of like be in a Broadway theater for me. Like that was like the whole experience. That's all I ever wanted.
I have a question. How long was it from you working on this show until your Broadway debut?
That would be about a year.
Wow. But like, isn't that incredible? Like, you know,
so I was working for this producer, right? Okay. So because of this producer and because of Sleight of Hand, I got to meet a bunch of people in the industry, like one of the actors in this show. His manager kind of agreed to send me out for stuff because she came and saw my cabaret show at the, you know, whatever. And she was like, OK, I'll send you out for stuff. And then the casting director of the show was the casting director for M. Butterfly. And she brought me in to audition for M. Butterfly, which I got as a replacement. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's because it's all about
seen your dead body work in that backers audition.
Well, sure.
She thought how you rolled out.
You know, she knew I was very, very committed. Because not to ruin it, I had to be in that box for like 45 minutes. Okay, so.
That's amazing.
So like, you know what I mean? So like, because of this show that ran for a week, you know, I ended up getting my first Broadway show.
That's so cool.
And
that's
my first amazing. Representation, who is honestly still my representation. I have the same manager I had in 1988. I think I signed my first contract with them. Wow. I still have that manager.
Wow. Yeah. That's what it's all about.
That's what it's literally all about. It's that people go, how do you join the industry? How do you get started? Any way you get started is the right way. I mean, well, kind of, but like,
yeah,
you know,
there's I mean, I could have been talented and gone to Michigan, but that's not how it was going to be for me. You know what I mean? I didn't know when I was growing up, I didn't know there were even schools that you could go to for that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
My biggest thing was like, does the college I want to go to do plays? Okay, then I guess I'll go to it. You know what I mean? Like really like big thinking on my part. I had no idea you could train. Never crossed my mind, you know? Wow. So
both of your stories.
Anyway.
That's both of your stories are amazing, and that's what this show is all about. It's about keying everyone involved into things that we don't know happens, you know, when the curtain is down. And that's what's amazing about this industry, is that this industry actually is amazing because of people like you that, you know, have incredible stories and experiences. And we thank you so much for coming on today. And unfortunately, we do have to wrap up, and we don't want to, because we love you and can talk to you all day. But, you know, just as a reminder, where can we follow you, find you on social media?
She is Ann Harada. What is it? Is it I Am Ann Harada?
I Am Ann Harada.
I'm Ann Harada on Instagram, but I never check it because I'm old. And on Instagram, then like you're not on it all the time, you miss all these things, and people go like, "You got mentioned in a story," and I'm like, "Well, great, that doesn't help me at all. I have no fucking idea what that was about."
A month later,
I saw you on Dr. Drama the other day.
There you go.
Yeah, right, I was, because she insists that's her platform, Instagram Live. I didn't even understand it. I was like, "What do you mean? It's just gonna start?" Like, I totally did not get that. I don't get Facebook Live. I don't get any of them. But anyway, the point is, I have an Instagram account because I need an Instagram account, but I don't try to send me a message and expect me to get it in any short period of time. You'll do much.
You can send me a message.
That's right, send Allie a message.
And then I will forward it to Ann. Yes.
Yes. You are
correct. That's the efficient way of doing things. Yes.
Come through both. I can do that. We love it.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much.
What about Allie?
Oh, she said, but say it again.
What about Allie?
Oh, it's just first name, last name. It's the beauty of having a weird name. Allie Ewalt, all things. Yeah.
I heard you say it, but I think that got lost in the kerfuffle. So yeah, Allie Ewalt, please, for all Allie and Anne inquiries, just go to Allie. And,
Allie Ewalt, yes.
Oh, my God. Thank you so much.
I'm just plain old Ann Harada on Twitter. Yeah.
Oh, and Twitter as well. That's very good. Cool. And that's Allie, helpful. Are you on Twitter too?
I am, yes. Also Allie Ewalt.
Helpful. Amazing. Thank you to everyone so much for watching tonight. Our next show is 2 weeks from tonight on February 4th at 7 p.m. And since Valentine's Day is in February, we thought it would be fun for our two shows in February for me and Michael to go on some double dates with some theatrical couples.
Yeah, so on February 4th, we have Marty Gold Cummings and Blake Allen, and...
Oh my God, you guys. On February 18th, we have Orfei and Andy Carl.
Yes, right here on Broadway Podcast Network at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Cannot wait for those.
Oh man, it's gonna be so fun. And remember to follow My Broadway Memory on social media for more updates. You can also follow
there it is.
You can also follow me personally at Remy Germanario and Michael at the Michael Kushner.
Yeah, so before we go, let's take a group photo, you know, just to remind people to watch. And if they missed out on the stream, then they can, you know, get a little teaser of what to see. So I think Remy and I would like to do a toothless photo. Just black out one of your photos, like with your one of your teeth with your fingers. Ready?
Just since we did it.
1, 2, 3. Perfect. Amazing. We got it.
thank you so much to Anne, Allie, Christina Bianco, our weather girl, Sierra Bogus's dentist, Emily and Allison at Lift Music Fund, co-creator Brian Sedita, Josh Freilich, and Laura Bonacci.
We'd also like to thank everyone at Broadway Podcast Network, Alan, Dory, Britt, Katie, and before we go, Alan, our producer, our amazing producer, did find a clip of Anne as the witch. So we're going to sign off with that.
Oh.
Bye!
Bye!
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.